Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Total Schemers podcast. My name is Sybil. Today, I'm joined by Jed. Say hello, Jed.
Hello, mate. You're right.
I'm all right. Say hello, Jake.
Hello, buddy. How's things?
Very good, mate. Very good. I imagine there's a certain game this weekend that you'll be very excited to talk about, but we'll get there. I think it's only right that we start with Arsenal because they are top of the table. 12 points from 12. Great form so far. Granted, they have had quite a... No, I wouldn't say an easy run because there is no easy run in the Premier League, but they have had more favourable fixtures than perhaps some other teams in the league. But you can only beat who's in front of you, and they seem to be doing a very, very good job at that. And they faced another team that was actually unbeaten in their opening three games, which was Fulham. And Fulham did give Arsenal a game, but Arsenal did look very good. The one thing I would say was missing, I think, even though Kieran Tierney offers a lot, I think they did miss Zinchenko. Jed, I'm going to come to you with that. Zinchenko already really embedded himself into this team, made himself very, very important. He's missing, and Arsenal start to look as if they're missing something. In my opinion, I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
It's probably too early to say. Yeah, I think if he'd had maybe four,
I mean this
five
fixture, this,
out,
I mean this match in isolation.
Okay, I mean yeah, again, I think it's still too early to say really because if a player has four or five games out of a team and there's a noticeable difference there, then you can say something like that. But one game, I'm not sure whether it makes a huge difference. Like, for example, I don't know whether Zinchenko stops them fucking about at the back for that goal that they concede. Do you know what I mean? So, like... Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know whether it made too much of a difference. But if he's not then back within the next sort of, like, three or four games... you'll probably notice a difference there, I think. Because in general, he is just a quality
player. Thinking more stylistically in terms of the kind of, for me, in the opening three games, they kind of look like a more fluid Man City, in my opinion, with Zinchenko stepping into midfield and being that extra body. Whereas I see Kieran Tierney maybe chipping in as an extra winger and being like an extra man in the final third, but not stepping into the midfield as a creative force. And that is a very Manchester City thing. This is obviously where Mikel Arteta's cut his teeth and learned the majority of his trade under the coaching team at Manchester City. And I thought the way Arsenal look were slightly more fluidity, but they kind of, I thought in this game, just stylistically, and I did think Arsenal were very good, and Kieran Tierney did actually offer quite a lot. I just thought they looked back to the sort of the style they maybe adopted in the later stages of last season. And I think if they can get a right back that's maybe slightly more creative than Ben White, and they have it on both sides, as City sort of have, and you have those extra bodies sitting in the midfield, and they really, really become that sort of Pep side, sort of like third chance creating machine, you know, which I think is the end goal for Mikel Arteta. I think what he wants to do is replicate that chance creation machine, where it's just, you go into a match and you know you're going to have at least 10 really, really quality chances, you know?
I think Tomiyasu could be that player, but he just isn't fit enough. You know, consistently. Mm. I think if he was fit enough consistently, he'd probably be starting ahead of Ben White at right back. I don't think Ben White at right back is the main like plan for him, is it? He's more of a centre half. So
he's centre back.
So I think it realistically, if Tomiyasu was fit 100% of the time, you'd play him and he'd probably be able to get forward. And also
he was a player that did actually.
Well.
He had an instant impact when he came in the Arsenal's team, I think. So I think that's worth pointing out there. JK Boy, Arsenal, top of the league, playing very, very well. What were your thoughts in terms of like how they're moving and where can you see? Can you see them dropping off? Is this a false dawn? You know, are they going to...
it's one of them, isn't it? You know, that certainly the last few years when Arsenal have had a good start to the season, you know, they don't want to say their fans, but a lot of their fans have jumped on the train of we're going to win the league. You know, almost a bit like that little Liverpool.
So this is the best start since the Invincible season. That's the big thing that's going around.
You know, they've had a very good start to the season, but I think you touched on it, Simo. Arguably, you could say they've not played a side that could really test them yet. You'd expect them to beat these sides anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the differences between this Arsenal side and perhaps ones before, you know, they do look very good. They are making a lot of chances. And in Gabriel Jesus, they've got a really good striker, someone who can find the net, which you could say over the years, a lot of Arsenal sides haven't had that goal scorer who can stick the ball in the net and create opportunities like him. Odegaard looks fantastic, you know, scored again. And the youngsters they've got coming through also look really, really good. There's definitely optimism around the Emirates, and I can definitely see why. Like you said as well, Simo, you know, Arteta, he knows how he wants them to play, and he's slowly moulding them into that side.
There's a reason why he's buying players from Manchester City.
I was just about to say that.
He clearly wants to emulate that system.
There's a reason that Zinchenko and Jesus have come in over other people. You know, he's worked with them at City, and that's how he'll want them to play. They'll know how Arteta will want them to play, so... For them, it'll be naturally easy to slot into that Arsenal system anyway, and it's working. So, you know, fair credit to Arsenal. They have started the season really, really well. Maximum points, the only side that has, you know, but the only way is down.
yeah, exactly. When you've not lost a game and you've not drawn a game,
when you're top of the league, you know, the only way is down. So.
And that's the thing. I mean, how is this group of players going to handle that? Have you watched All or Nothing?
I've finished it.
I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah. I think actually, like, you kind of, I mean, I understand that like, this is a series that's been cut to show you the bits that they want to see. You know, there's obviously things that happened that were not seen on screen there, but the things that do happen on screen, very, very impressive. I think the attitude of some of the players as well is, or the character that you think that I maybe necessarily didn't associate that kind of dressing room atmosphere or the type of character that maybe behind the scenes with the players that kind of opens your eyes, you know. Like, I think Aaron Ramsdale is a great personality. I didn't really picture him being that sort of like positive influence behind closed doors, you know, because he's quite young, but you know, he really is. But I think again, Jake says he goes down. I think it will happen eventually. But I think they will come up against a Man City and maybe they'll take a knock or something like that. And
for me, it's how this squad copes with, like you said, Simo, a bit of pressure when injuries potentially creep in and the fixtures pile up as well. You know, the Europa League, that Thursday-Sunday schedule is going to be quite grueling. So
it's a horrible schedule.
It's how this Arsenal side copes with that. It's great starting the season the way they have, but when things start to get a bit tough, do they have the mental character to keep going? I guess we'll only find out.
Do you know what? I think this year that they do. I think the one thing that the All or Nothing documentary really did a good job of is showing the project that they're building there. And I think that they talked a lot about having the right sort of attitude and right sort of players in the dressing room. They've put a lot of emphasis on Arteta's like motivational speeches and sort of bringing the group together and things like that, and how he's got rid of the bad influences like Aubameyang. And I think you can see that paying off this season. They look like more of a team this season than they have done for a long time. So I think that potentially this year could be the year that they do cope with those challenges a bit better. And you can tell that they look really united as well. You know, and there's definitely a passion that goes throughout the whole squad. Like the way they were celebrating the win the other day just shows you how much it means to them that they've dug deep, come from behind and won that game.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are, people were saying that they were over celebrating and stuff like that, which I don't think is correct at all. But I think that shows what they're building at the minute is pretty good. I think that this season, Arsenal fans can be excited, genuinely.
People are always going to say and criticise when the so-called top six over-celebrate against what would be perceived as lesser opposition. But I mean, at the end of the day, that Arsenal side has had a tough sort of 3, 4, maybe 5, 6 seasons, not where things haven't really gone the way that they'd expect a club of that size.
Well,
You know, so they've got to unite, they've got to like enjoy these moments and sort of build off them. I don't think
there's it's a great
wrong.
Point there, Simo, because Arsenal sides of previous years, as soon as Fulham scored, they'd have lost that game.
Oh, 100% it was that game.
They'd have crumbled. You know, player makes a mistake, the opposition score. Arsenal sides of previous years would have crumbled and thrown that away. I think it's a massive win for Arsenal. And I've got them to finish. I had them in my top four from our predictions at the start of the season, and I do think they will finish in the top four.
I had them as third.
I think they'll have a strong season this year.
Yeah, I had them as third, and I think if I'm wrong, I think it's because they'll be higher. very good. Like I said, I'm not getting too carried away, but I think a great group of players and a very promising manager, and I think they're going to go in and kick on. But we will come to the game that Jake is chomping at the bit to get into.
Brentford Everton.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Wolves Newcastle. Liverpool 9. Bournemouth 0. Tough day for Scotty Parker. Tough day. Although I will say the noise that Scotty Parker has been fucking making in the press leading up to this game, it was almost as if it was written to the stars that he was going to get a spanking. The continuous sort of, we're not good enough for this league, we're not good enough. It's as if he tries to fit it into every interview. It's like he's trying to like already justify being sacked for the fucking less than five games in. So I mean, they're not that kind of noise. It makes you chew a pumping, in my opinion. But Jake, how good will Liverpool?
Fantastic, mate. You know, 9 goals. Say it's a great day all round at Liverpool.
Can you stop me there, by the way? 9 goals, no goal involved for Mohamed Salah.
No Salah. That was going to be one of my points.
Absolutely incredible that happened. That's insane. Like you tell anyone who's watched any game of Premier League football in the last 5 years, Liverpool have put 9 goals past an opponent. How many do you think Mo Salah had an involvement in? Your minimum answer would be 4.
Yeah.
Surely.
If you tell them then, they go, what happened? What? Did he get injured? No.
Yeah.
No, he played the 90. He played the whole game.
It's
ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Did he not get a chance? Did he not get any? No, he had loads of chances. He had open nets, 2 open nets. Jesus. Carry on, Jake. Sorry.
It's a really good point. But no, I thought Liverpool were fantastic. You know, there's people, you know, at the start of the season, you know, 3 games in without a win, saying, you know, the wheels have fell off the Jurgen Klopp train. But I think they firmly, I know it's people will say it's only Bournemouth, but, you know, to score 9 goals is ridiculous against anybody, especially in the Premier League. And Liverpool were fantastic. I think it was key they got an early start. And, you know, 2.5 minutes in, Luis Diaz scores. And it just settles the nerves straight away.
I think I just put it into the group chat. I'm just so glad we scored early. You know, so glad it was out the way early, you know.
It's not just that. It was the follow-up as well. You know, they got the one and then, bam, straight away, you know, a couple of minutes later, they score another. And to go in at half-time 5-0, you can't really ask for much more than that. But we had a conversation with my dad, and you know, he's been a Liverpool fan since the 70s, and he said, you know, what he's seen over the years with Liverpool is when they sort of go 3-4, even 5-0 up, the foot really does come off the gas, and we don't really go for the throat of these sorts of sides and really make these statement victories. And he said it was just really refreshing to see us stick 9 goals past the team, because, you know, it's the first time in the Premier League that we've done it, but we've done it a few times in the past before that. But it was fantastic to do so. You know, 12 shots on target and 9 goals.
To be fair, it's a terrible time for Bournemouth to play Liverpool. And that's Jurgen Klopp even said that in his post match. He's like, this isn't the time you want to come play Liverpool. When they come off a run of games that they should have won, could have won, and they've not put. And it's not for the fact that the Liverpool have been hard done by. Liverpool have not been good enough in those games to get anything. You know, and you come in your Bournemouth and your manager's making noise that you're not good enough. And Jurgen Klopp is just looking for a bounce game. And he sees this on the card and he thinks, fucking yes. And I think in different circumstances, if that's a mid-season game, Liverpool are doing well, competing for a title, then 5-0 at half-time, the game probably ends 6.
Yeah.
It ends 6, right? But when you've been Liverpool and you've not been at it and you've not been exhibiting the effort that you've done in previous seasons, you know, you go out and it's put them in a sword again. And isn't it? Because every player on the pitch wants to prove that they're still part of this amazing side that lost fucking 3 games last season in all competitions. You know, they still, they've all, I mean, I think standout player for me, Bobby Firmino, world-class performance. Yeah. I was heavily critical of Bobby's performance against Manchester United. I thought it was far, far too deep. He was trying to get involved in play. I understand that, but at a certain point, get up the pitch, play on the last man, get fucking jump on Lisandro Martinez or something. You know, do something, stop playing centre-back. But I thought this was a Bobby-esque.
It was Bobby at his best,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it's just absolutely the, like, I would say it's a false nine role. But it's not. It's the Bobby Firmino role. It's adapted. It's aggressive, and it's absolutely outstanding. One of the best set. I know it was. If it was against better opposition in Bournemouth, I would put it down as probably one of the best centre forward performances I've ever seen. But I'm still going to have it up there because he was everywhere. He was everywhere. He was in the box. He was in the midfield. He was out in the wing. He was absolutely everywhere.
Does it impact Nunes that, you know, that Firmino's played so well? Does that
absolutely
stop getting back in the side now when he's
absolutely
not suspended?
No, I mean, like, right. Bobby is an established top player, right? And granted, there has been players that come in to challenge him for his position. The first one was Diego Jota, who really challenged Bobby. And from those lack of minutes, maybe lack of confidence, now a big expensive signing comes in, and he's a through the middle player. Roberto Firmino knows this is his replacement, and Liverpool have spent big to bring him in. Does that kind of alleviate pressure? Because, you know, they've spent money and you think, well, the pressure's not on me, it's on him. He's got a massive price tag. Every time I perform, you know, I up my standing in the squad. You know, Nunes comes on and he's dominated by Anderson, and not a particularly amazing central defender performance. And by headbutting him, he kind of sends a message to every centre back in the league that, do you know what I mean? Yeah. If you get at me, if you come into the back of me, you run your studs down the back of my leg, you stand on my feet and stuff like that, stuff that's not going to get you a yellow, you know, then you get a reaction. And yeah, I think, although Nunes was heavily influential in the Fulham game, and he did play well, I think still a lot to be desired. If you're going to, are you going to drop Bobby after, you know, a hat-trick of assists?
That's what I was getting at. You know? It's like, can you drop him now that he's played so well? You
know, the short answer I'm saying is no. No,
well, he's got another game out.
Yeah.
So say, you know, if Firmino goes and scores another couple of goals against Newcastle, I don't think you can drop Bobby.
No.
Not a chance. Not a chance. When the thing with Firmino as well is... Yeah, well, this is it. You know, the thing with Firmino as well is when he's so confident like this, and, you know, he's in good form, he often just keeps that form going as well. You know, look back to the year we won the Champions League.
It's a great point, Jake.
Just electric. Every time he was scoring, you know, the next game he was doing it. He was just on fire, and hopefully this is the kickstart now for Bobby to do.
Does
that
he even need to score to be on fire? Because he's that type of player that as long as he's at it, as long as he's in the mood for it, and you can normally tell in the first 15 minutes.
Such an exciting player to watch.
Yeah, if Bobby's in the mood for it. And yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. Nunes, he's got to be worried. He's got to be looking at that performance and think, I don't know if I've got that in a locker. You know, quite frankly, I don't know if I have a hat-trick assist in the locker. I don't know if I could drop in the midfield and beat players. And, you know, some of the best plays that Liverpool have done in the past sort of 5 years that have been, you know, my favourite Liverpool goal has been in the past sort of the Klopp era for certain. Is Bobby just sitting down those like Granit Xhaka, you know what I'm on about? I think it was a League Cup game, but it was still absolutely superb. So he's hugely important to this fan base, Bobby Firmino. And Nunes needs to be thinking, God, I've got him and I've got Diogo Jota. And granted, Diogo Jota can play on the left and right wing, but he does his best work through the middle, in the box, in the six yard box, between the sticks. Diogo Jota comes alive. Just for his movement. I don't think there's many centre-forwards about that have better movement than Diego Jota in between the sticks. I mean, he's only 5 foot, like, 9 or something. He has no right to have the amount of headed goals he has. It's just based off his instinct and
movement. Do you remember Tim Cahill? He was really short but so good in the air. He's like that.
Yeah.
Scores headers every time he's in the box.
Yeah, exactly. It's just off instinct, off movement, make yourself strong and stuff like that. I think I've kind of went a long way around this, but I'll come to you, Jake. I mean, Nunes, for me, still got work to do. There's no such thing as a sure thing, even if there's a big price tag. I don't think there's nothing that's given to you in a Klopp side. Mm-hmm. Where do you see him landing, Jake?
Do you mean in the future?
Does he come straight back in? Is he good enough to displace
him?
No,
I don't think he comes.
You know,
I don't think he comes straight back in. For simple as, you know, I think his first game back's the derby against Everton. You know, it's always a bit of a tasty game. I don't think he jumps straight back into that side. I think he maybe comes off the bench for that. You know, it just depends on what's the build up before. You know, it is all dependent on that. It depends how we play against Newcastle. We might, you know, Firmino might have an absolute stinker against Newcastle, and you know, and then the door opens again for Nunes. But you know, like you said, Simo, Jota's got a good thing going because he can play on the left and the right as well, so he has that option there. But I agree with you. I think he's the best. He does his best work through the middle.
Here's a question for you, lads. So on the Nunes subject, before a ball was kicked this season, there was a lot of talk between Premier League fans, I think, about who would have the bigger impact, Nunes or Haaland. Obviously, yeah. It's a City-Liverpool sort of rivalry that's going on at the minute. Do you think that ship has sailed now this season, given the start that Haaland's had?
I think it's different. That's a different, saying the bigger impact. Haaland's always going to score goals for City. You could stick any
He's averaging like 8 touches a game, you know, Haaland. He's not involved in much of the play, but he's just there to get chances. Nunes will have to hold up the ball. Nunes will be required to do more for Liverpool than Haaland will be for City. And I think Haaland will get more chances. I mean,
Haaland will score more goals.
Yeah, Haaland will score more. They're both very tall strikers and young prospects, so they are going to be kind of viewed in the same sort of like against each other. I think Darwin Nunes will do very well to score anywhere near as much goals.
Yeah,
as Erling Haaland.
I think Haaland's just a monster, isn't he? The weekend, obviously, he's basically turned the game on his head on his own.
Shouldn't have been on the pitch though.
Oh yeah.
Well, is there a high foot or something like that?
It's a red card, mate.
Yeah.
50-50 though, isn't it? That's the worst thing about that sort of one player's got a foot up and one player's got his head down. Like,
there's been a few decisions.
The third goal for Palace as well. I don't know why that's been chalked out.
That was a bit weird. That was a bit weird.
Match fixing.
I was gonna say, man, like I'm not a conspiracy guy, right? But I see decisions like that. What the fuck is going on? That is like, how could you like? I'm not going to get into it because we go down this rabbit hole, boys, and we're there for an hour.
What actually happened? So Edison's gone to roll the ball.
Edison's
out.
Rolled the ball out, and the Palace player
put as his it's leg left out his, in front of him.
It's about two yards away from him.
It's on the floor. The ball's on the floor. It's gone. It's away. It's fucking
whoosh. Ridiculous.
It's away from his hand. What the fuck?
He's not in control of the ball anymore. He's throwing it out when there's a Palace player in front of him.
Ederson always seems to get these decisions. Do you remember the Jude Bellingham ones? Jude Bellingham Champions League last season. And it's like Bellingham comes out, gets absolutely fucking halved by Ederson. doesn't tackle Ederson, just receives a tackle from Ederson and somehow gets a goal disallowed. I don't know, somebody needs to...
match fixing.
Yeah, somebody needs to check some refs fucking... It's not, it cuts to Peter Walton, done it, and he's just like, oh, well, you know, and you think, shut the fuck up, man. Why are you paying that guy? He's fucking never going to go against his pals. He'll find a way to justify the worst fucking decisions going. Get that guy.
You could have had that tackle when, do you know when De Jong karate kicked Alonso in the Champions League final? And if it hadn't been given, Peter Walton would still be like, I think it was justifiably not given.
He
killed him. It's like, oh, it's not his fault though, is it?
I don't know why they pay that guy. Let's just carry on with the Manchester City game. Manchester City give Crystal Palace a head start. And I was still never felt that Manchester City wasn't going to come back. Right. And
you never do.
You said it in the chat, though, Simo, didn't you? To be fair.
Yeah.
They've always got a way back into a game.
they're just so robotic, aren't they, in their creation of everything. Like, it's always going to be, the chances are always going to be there because the players they've got are so good at making opportunities. I mean, Bernardo Silva, I thought, was fantastic. And as much as I hate Bernardo Silva as of like a person, like on the pitch, he's unbelievable. And I just can't understand why. Like, they're What's even thinking about letting him go. Mate, he's done a lot of stuff. He's done a lot of stuff. We'll just leave it there. The bellend. I admire his on-pitch skills, but I don't know why they want to get rid of him, though. You know, there's talks of him leaving, and it just baffles me because I thought he was fantastic here.
Like, somebody needs to check. I'm just picturing,
like, every time, like, Jake's in front, in like, let's say he's in the queue at Greg's or something, there's one sausage roll left. Bernardo Silva's in front of him and
straight
takes
in him, mate.
The bastard.
Jake pulls up to park at lock, fucking Bernardo Silva in his spot.
In his spot. Just every day.
Every Don't day, stop. That man does something to me. Great, great player though.
Oh, dear me. Yeah,
Jake. I know you've not got over Bernardo blowing your birthday cake candles out. Let it go. Oh, God.
And I never will.
Every day, Bernardo.
He's fucking done it again.
He's done it again.
Oh, God. Oh, dear me. But
good player, though. Good player. I'll give him that.
Very good.
Great player.
Good at kicking a ball around the pitch. Manchester City, robotic. Never in doubt. They've got a wee bit of ground to make up on the Arsenal, you know. But you wouldn't rule them out. When we come to Manchester City, they play the same every single week. It's really hard to try and bring something different to the conversation when we come onto Manchester City's game. And I think people think, well, why we never talk about them? It's because they play the same every week. They change the players. It's the same game every week. Yeah. You know, it's the high line. It's the dominant possession. It's the professional foul. It's the, you know, quality chance after quality chance after quality chance, you know. And are they a wee bit loose at the back?
£80 million footballer putting the ball in the net, or £50 million, £60 million, whatever.
Yeah. The £100 million footballer comes off the bench for 5 minutes. You know, for a cameo or something like that is the standard. You know, they're different for every other football team I've ever seen.
Imagine if Arsenal go on and, you know, do have an incredible season and win the league, and it's Jesus's goals that like get them there. That would be really poetic for Man City.
Like,
I think
if Liverpool aren't going to get it,
Zinchenko whips the ball in for a Jesus header. Like,
yeah, for just the pain it would cause Guardiola. Who, by the way, at a certain point, I think I was going to say, has someone needs to check if he's like, there's either multiple Pep Guardiolas that all look the same, or there's multiple Pep Guardiolas living in the one body. Because 1 minute he'd be like, Bernardo, he could go, and then he's so important to this team, so important to this team. It's like when Aguero retired, and he was like, we cannot replace him. I was like, you could have given him a contract. You could have given him a contract.
Give him another year.
Don't fucking cry about it now. You know what I mean? There's still time. He's fucking right there. You know what I mean?
He wants to stay.
He wants to stay. He cannot replace him. Fuck. Oh, God, man. So how old is that guy? This is the only way to make it interesting talking about Manchester City, because it's the... Do you know, I'll bring it back to
it's refreshing,
Arsenal.
Though. It's refreshing to see another side like Palace, you know, same as with Newcastle last week, to actually go at them a bit. It is refreshing to see teams actually go for them. Palace are like one of the few sides that like beat City on the regular. I know they didn't this time, but there was a little part of me that was
Big Roy's legacy. Big Roy's legacy.
Yeah.
He knows how to beat Man City. Wait till the likes of Fulham play Man City this year. I think that would be a really good game.
The majority of teams in the league are actually playing quite attractive football.
Brighton at the minute are playing really well as well, aren't they? And they're not conceding any goals. Like they look pretty solid at the minute. I think, you know, teams like that for Man City this year are not going to be as straightforward as they have been in previous seasons. just based on what we've seen so far.
Yeah. I mean, they will beat them, but it might not.
Yeah. They'll have to work harder for it. Yeah.
They might need to move from second gear and maybe third for 10 minutes. You know? I think. What was I going to say? I was thinking, linking them to Arsenal, like, even one player removes from Art, Sinchenko comes out. And to me, it looks like a different approach to a game. Whereas with Manchester City, it's like every name in the team sheet can change, and it's just the same. It's the same, the exact same.
That's how it is for every club, though, near enough. I think the only other team that you could say that about is potentially Liverpool, because Liverpool have a sort of system like that as well, I think, where the players seem to fit in pretty well. But for every other team, one player going out does mean that you have to set up the game differently.
But what I'm saying is something feels different.
Oh, yeah, you know, definitely.
We're missing Thiago.
Yeah, it feels different.
There's a different look, you know?
Yeah.
Or unimportant, Ivan Toney left out of Brentford, looks completely different, you know?
There's no doubt that Man City do still look like the same team, regardless of who's playing. That's absolutely the case. But like I say, I think for the point about Zinchenko is that every team probably has the same sort of thing where you have to make one change that does impact then the way that you set up for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
So
right. So we get time to go on. And Manchester United got a decent win over Southampton. Southampton could have been a little bit more clinical, I think. Not as straightforward as people might make it out to be. But an interesting top six in the league right now, boys. Arsenal sitting top, Man City in second place. Spurs had another good game, and we'll finish talking on the Spurs game. Brighton in fourth place, Leeds in fifth, who I back to actually have a pretty poor season, so pretty rubbish. although we'll see where they're sitting in February. Chelsea in sixth place, which is decent enough for them because it doesn't feel like they've had a particularly hugely positive start, but they're one of the teams that just kind of, they get the points. Even when they're not playing, you know, at their best. But we'll come to Spurs games. We're going to finish up on a Spurs game. Richarlison, keepy uppies in the middle of the park.
It's a big debate at the moment about
against Forest. What is wrong with it? It's funny. Well, it's shit housing. If your team does that, if your player does that, he's a hero, regardless of what club it is. So right. what's wrong with it?
I would say, it's because it's him. It's because it's him, right? If Ronaldinho does keepy uppies, which he did when he played, right? If Ronaldinho carded every time he did a keepy uppie, then he would played a lot of minutes.
You say that,
but it's
you
him.
Say that, but
it's his face. It's his fucking face, mate.
Did you see it though? When Neymar was taking the absolute piss out of some player in League One or whatever it's called.
Yeah,
you know, he was showboating. He was doing flicks and tricks, and the referee booked him for unprofessional conduct, basically.
Well, that's stupid.
It was a couple of years ago. It was a few years ago. I'm sure it was on, like, I seen it on Twitter or YouTube, or whatever. But Neymar actually did get booked for basically taking the piss out of someone.
It doesn't warrant a booking, though. Like, it does not just skinning not, someone
it's,
and like
it's not a booking. But
doesn't,
I've seen,
doesn't warrant a booking.
You've like, seen the debate on Twitter, seen, and it,
but then, you know, I've seen the thing is,
saying that he should have been booked for unsportsmanlike conduct. Like, that's not what unsportsmanlike conduct is. Like, unsportsmanlike conduct is like not cheating, but cheating within the laws of the game, cheating that's frowned upon. Like, the team's not giving the ball back when a player's, you know, when they've had the ball given back to them because someone's gone down injured.
There's a bigger gulf.
That's unsportsmanship, isn't it? Not like
there's a bigger gulf. Like, it could be like
he did two keepy uppies and passed the ball away and then got
in the Neymar situation. The ref's probably like, you're making £600,000 a week and this guy
I'm booking you for being a brick.
He's got to go to work after this, you know. He does not need this.
This guy's got Uber Eats deliveries to
No, I mean, some people like French football. That's not for me. I think the justice was served in the pitch.
Neco Williams just went Neco straight Williams through the back of him.
Just absolutely sliced him.
As far as it needs to go, then. He's gone. That's exactly what would happen on any football pitch. Anywhere in the world, if that happened at Sunday League, someone would be flying through him, and that's it. Yeah. That's all it is.
Oh, no,
it's just whoever's then done the keepy up, he's just going to look like a bit of an idiot. There's no need for the outrage, just because he's done a couple of keepy up. I guarantee you, if somebody else does that, next weekend or this during this week.
Because he's a massive
Saint-Maximin or something like that, does it?
Because he's a shit.
It's literally what it is.
Saint-Maximin does it. Saint-Maximin does it, and it's in like Soccer AM showboat reels for the next 10 years and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it just is, isn't it? I get that Richarlison is an idiot, but he's a shithouse. The Premier League needs shithouses, you know?
But it's the same thing, I don't think of ASM, and I don't think that is a human toilet. Whereas when I think of Richarlison, I do think that is a human toilet. That is utter garbage. Big pile of burning garbage. No, I don't.
To be fair, though, he's probably the only player that can have four appearances this season off the bench and cause so much uproar between everybody else.
It's great. But do you know where he belongs? He doesn't belong with Spurs. He belongs at Atletico Madrid with Simeone.
The Legion of Darkness. The Legion of Doom.
He's a Simeone player.
That's where he needs to be. We should only ever see him in the Champions League. Shithousing teams. Like, I don't want to see him do keepy uppies against Forest. I want to see him doing it against Barcelona.
Going straight through the back of him.
Yeah, exactly. That's where he belongs.
It's a good. He's a proper Atletico player. Like,
yeah, destined to. If there was ever a move that was destined to happen in football. Absolutely, Richarlison, the Atleti. There was many other games. I mean, like when he plays like six matches in 4 years for fucking Conte. I do think he'll play. I think he is a good player, and I'm maybe overly harsh with him because he was an Everton player. That's the only reason. He's probably very. I don't know much about the guy. He's probably very charitable or something. I feel probably bad when someone fucking tweets is like, "Oh, he's fucking. He gave away this or some shit." So would half. I was fucking. You know, what I mean? So would half. I was on 200 grand a week. You know. Right. I think that's gonna do his boys. There's obviously other games.
Can I just add one final thing? So I was at Wolves Newcastle on Sunday. And both goals in that were absolute worldies. And that's the final thing that I want to say is that they were both just class. But Ruben Neves is a cut above the rest of the players on the pitch. He was class. His goal was quality. And Saint-Maximin's volley.
Unbelievable.
Sky.
Unbelievable goal.
Yeah. That's one of them that we've all done once. One time, you know, a ball's dropped out the sky and you've hit it just sweet. But it only happens once. And you're like, what does he think? That probably... Do you know what I mean?
You're absolutely right,
boys, that's going to do it. So thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for the listeners tuning in. Please download and follow wherever you're getting this episode, and until next time, cheer to bye. Sports Social Podcast Network.